If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and today we are talking about why so many talented engineers stay broke. There's a lot of this happening. There's a lot of talent. We can extrapolate to other positions too, like musicians and songwriters and producers, but we're just going to stay on the topic of engineers because that's what I am, that's what I specialize in. Now, there's a lot of great advice out there and a lot of great ways of processing and thinking about these things. These are some of the things that I'm thinking about right now. I'm reading a list, right? And I just want to make sure that I'm kind of sharing this episode in a way that is encouraging and empowering, not in a way that's discouraging. I want to grow some self-awareness and then use some of these points, if you wish, to kind of improve your systems and figure out what's going on. So I've shared this many times in the past. Talent or skill is not the high-paying commodity in this industry. It's not. That's kind of like, it's not the ceiling of how well you'll do. It's the floor, talent and skill there. Like, of course you should be good. And that's how you get people coming back, but that's not how you find new people necessarily. And we're going to talk all about this stuff here. So there's a lot of incredibly talented engineers who are struggling. And there's also some like average ones that are thriving. Who knows? Maybe I'm one of those average ones, but I am thriving. That's without a doubt. And the difference almost never comes down to just skill, especially something that is a strange paradoxical blend of objective and subjective skill, right? Okay, so a lot of people, this is something that I think about a lot often with like school and whatnot. A lot of people just wait to be ready. You know, there's always plugins, courses, another thing to learn. And this is like a lot tied with confidence. I don't think confidence comes from, you know, we did an episode on preparing is the right, builds the right sort of confidence. In the context of baseball, if you're like practicing a lot, by the time you get into the batter's box, you're like, you've done everything that you can. You're kind of utilizing the illusion of control, and then you'll have confidence stepping into the batter's box. Now, we're talking about the opposite thing here, which is sometimes doing is the thing that gets you ready. Like, no matter how much you get in front of a pitching machine, no matter how much you get in front of even a live batter, live pitcher in practice, it's not the same. You cannot get ready for a game without the pressure of being in a game. Right, the pressure of being in a clutch position. Like, that's another form of readiness. So, like, yes, there is what we talked about in an episode of, like, a month or two ago about being prepared, doing your homework, just clearing your conscience. But there's also the idea of, like, just doing it a lot. Because even with, like, mixing, I've talked about in the past about how mixing with stems, that practice stems is awesome. But a big part of mixing and a big part of the practice is doing all of that with the pressure of a client's approval, right? Like, it's one thing to mix in a void. It's another thing to mix under the pressure and expectations of a client who's paying. That's something to consider. You know, to a certain degree, I don't like the idea of people saying readiness is a myth, because there is something about being ready. But I think in a situation where it's like this, where unlike baseball, music is not something that can be really be taught. It's or engineering is not something that can really be taught. It can only be learned, right? Where like baseball is something that especially can be taught, right? With something as subjective as mixing, there is some truth to readiness is a myth. You get ready by doing, not before doing. But I mean, there's some nuance there, right? And I will say, to be fair to the engineers who are working, that are doing well, that are thriving, they aren't perfect. They're just committed. And I think that's another thing too. I don't think it's lacks any self-awareness to decide that you're ready in the face of some lack of preparedness. I mean, there's a threshold there. Like there's stupidity of jumping into something and saying you can, Dunning-Kruger effect, be saying that you're the best. And then there's another thing to just do humbly, quietly, like understanding that this is going to be a learning experience, that I'm going to make mistakes, but doing your best because you love it. And I think that's the thing too. It's like, if you do something because you love it and you want to learn, that's like a good way of going about working without being perfect. But at the same time, if you have to tell yourself, I'm the best, no one's as good as me, I'm the GOAT, I'm going to be the greatest artist of all time, that's probably an unhealthy place to start from. Unless you're doing that intentionally, right? The only exception to that rule is kind of like the idea of like, if you've read Russ's book, like intentional delusion is an idea. It's like not necessarily manifesting, but like intentionally saying those things out loud, not because you actually believe it, but because it's like getting you hyped. That's another thing too. But anyway, we're moving on. Number two, most people, they don't have a lot of systems for getting clients. Now, we did an episode about within the last month about breaking down Panorama Mastering's lists of outreach and stuff like that. How to do outreach and different ways of getting clients. Refer back to that episode, please. Yeah, so in general, skill gets you the second job and following jobs. Relationships get you the first, that's for sure. Almost everything in this industry is word of mouth. I mean, when it's subjective, creative work that is being done, it's not like, it's not like, hey, can you build me a bookshelf? There is no like, okay, this is a good, this is, we need something functioning just to get it done. This is like, beyond function, it is an art form, right? So it is a lot of subjective taste. How do you trust someone? What is the practical solution to introducing someone to seek out who's good for the job that you want, that you're envisioning, that for a job that does not exist, that has not been done in the same way that you want it to be done? The best way to do that is word of mouth. Like, do you put yourself on the line to trust this person to do this? Like, I've met you before. I really enjoyed working with you. I think that we'll have the same interests, so I'm going to reach out to you, right? It's word of mouth. That's just how practically how the industry works. It's not meant to be gatekeepy. It's not supposed to be like that. And that's just practically how it works, right? Most talented engineers have zero consistent outreach, zero follow-up, zero process. And that's the thing too. It's like for me, one of the things that I do, I prefer intimate one-on-one conversations. I have a budget for lunch and coffee. Both time and money budgets for lunch and coffee every single week with people. I'm constantly inviting people to my place. I'm constantly driving out to people to meet them there. I'm just trying to meet people every week. And some weeks it's literally 3 to 5 times a week. Other weeks it's maybe once a week. But very rarely do I have a week where I don't meet anybody at all. Even when I am busy, I want to be clear with that. Like even when I am busy, that is something that I do. And it's really hard. I genuinely, if I'm going to be a little vulnerable here, I genuinely feel like I've heard a rumor. Let me look it up. I heard a rumor that most people can only remember like 150 people at any given time. I don't know if, let's see here. You are referring to Dunbar's number, an evolutionary psychology concept suggesting human brains have a cognitive limit of about 150 meaningful relationships. This means keeping track of who each person is, what they care about, and how everyone relates to each other becomes overwhelmingly difficult past this threshold. Okay, I don't necessarily believe in that hardcore, but if it is true, I'm definitely past that threshold. Like, I have a hard time keeping up with people. This is just something that you're going to have to go through. If you have less than 150 people, time to build it up. Let's go. You got it. And you're built for it. So anyway, just keep that in mind. Okay. Referrals don't just happen. You have to create conditions for them. Being good in the room isn't enough for nobody knows that. Nobody knows that. Being good in the room isn't enough if nobody knows you exist. Yeah, so make yourself known. I mean, Jesse Ernster has a story where he happened to work with Kanye one time, and right afterwards he took the big risk of just saying like, hey, I want to continue to work with you. And he said, you know what? Yeah, sure. I mean, it was a one-time thing, right? But that's a lot of like closed mouths, don't get fed kind of vibes. It doesn't mean being like an audacious loudmouth in the room. It just means like, hey, like, know what you want, and it's okay to be driven for those things. Usually you want to do that. I will give a little caveat to this. Usually you want to do that in this from the perspective of serving and not from the perspective of taking, if you can. And usually they're the same exact things. Jesse wanted a job from Kanye. Kanye needed an engineer, but if you approach it in the way it's like, hey, me, 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 versus, hey, I want to help. I know I can do a good job. You know I can do a good job. We just did a session, right? It's better to approach things in a giving way, even if it's the same exact thing. The way that you go about it does matter. And it does matter not just for the person that's hearing you say it, but also for your own mental health. Like, I don't want to say mental health, but like for your own conscience, for your own self-belief, etc. It's better to do that in the long run. Okay, a lot of people undercharge and resent it. I mean, come on. You should not ever be competing on price, right? I say this often. Never, ever, ever compete based on price in this industry. You cannot compete based on price. The only exception to that, what I'm talking about, is if you are online, like on Fiverr, on Upwork, on Engine Ears or whatever, where most of your clients are coming in from discoverability on like in an online marketplace, then you're going to have to compete on price. Even if you have really, really great credits, you're still going to have to compete on price because you're online, right? There is no, it's a lot lower trust scenario. That's just what it is. People find you randomly, then they discover that you have credits. Where people that approach you directly know who you work with, understand what you sound like, know who you are, right? That's a high trust. And high trust pays more. That's the thing. So anyway, underpricing feels like a strategy, but it's actually a trap. It attracts the wrong clients, devalues your work, and creates burnout fast. Okay, don't compete on price. Do not think about how you charge based on what is the lowest I'm willing to do. That's a bad way of approaching it, right? I don't necessarily know what is the right way of approaching it right off the top of my head right now. Let me think about that. But it's definitely not right to be like, what is the least that I'm willing to do? That's not just this. And this isn't just a reflection on like money and income and like how much you love something. Cause it's easily argue like if you really love something, then you'd be willing to do it for less. Nothing like that. This is literally, approaching it with how little I can charge is like looking at yourself and be like, how little do I think I'm worth? And when you think about it in that perspective, it really, really can affect your confidence, how you perceive yourself, and how you present yourself to customers. So just consider that. Pricing communicates positioning. If you charge nothing, people assume you're worth nothing. And that's true, like with buyer psychology. Like the more that you charge, the more that they will trust you again. And it's kind of like backwards because high trust is what pays more, right? And how do you create high trust? By charging more. Like one of the ways of creating more trust is charging more. It's paradoxical. It doesn't make sense. But at the same time, it makes sense. You understand. Okay. The switch from what will they pay to what do I charge is a huge mindset shift. Now, this I don't want to get too Machiavellian here. to taking advantage of other people's situations. Don't make what you charge about you necessarily. Make it about them. Like, what? Sorry, let me start over. Let me rephrase this. You do not want to be a parasite. You're not trying to take advantage of anybody else. You don't want to come off that way, right? You want to allow people the autonomy of working with you, giving people a choice. What do I charge? Is a way of establishing a position, is a way of establishing autonomy and understanding that they don't have to work with you. You can, or they can when they're ready, right? Instead of trying to get the most out of them. Okay, that's it. Let's see, what else did I write down here? Okay. A lot of engineers confuse busy with productive. I'm going to kind of give a lot of nuance to this because I disagree with this a little bit. But I'm going to start off arguing one side and I'm going to come back to it. Doing 10 free or low-paid sessions a week feels like a hustle, but it's spinning wheels. All right. That I kind of disagree with already. We're going to talk about it a little bit later. Are sessions that you do take on building towards something, a relationship, a placement, a referral, or just filling times? Strategic business looks different from reactive business, busyness. Strategic busyness looks different from reactive busyness. Okay. Looking busy gets more work. That is true. Not even being busy. Being busy brings more work is one thing. Looking busy brings more work is another thing. I do think that doing at the very beginning of your career and at the very beginning of your career, when you are considering school as an option, doing free or low-paid sessions is amazing, is incredible, can build relationships 100%. Because the reason why I bring up school is because a lot of people are paying money, going into debt to do a very limited amount of portfolio projects that they may not even want to use for portfolio. They're given some sort of a homework assignment in school. They're paying money. They're getting negative dollars to practice. And if you're considering that as an option, instead, just do a lot of free work. I remember one semester, this is, by the way, like my most busy semester. When I was in school, I did a bunch of audio engineering classes. I think I did maybe 10 to 15 different projects throughout the course of a semester. Right? What is a semester? 3-4 months. So that's like 3 to 4 songs a month. That's like 1 song a week for homework. And that's like my busiest season, like my busiest semester. That's not enough work. Like if you're trying to get better, like you're paying money to do less than what other people who are doing it for free are doing. So like instead, how about you just pay $0 and work for free with clients local with you, friends that are local with you? Right. Now, there is something to be said about like if you're in school, you might find people that have some form of mutual trust, somebody else in the music, in the same major that is emphasizing in something else, someone else that's doing music. And then you have like, you know, better peer relationships to offer free work from a better, higher trust position. Right. That's something to be said. But that being said, my goodness, like if you're paying money to do practice sessions, portfolio sessions, do it yourself. Don't go to school. You don't have to go to school for that. School is a waste of time. There's like, hold on. It's not a waste of time, but I am saying like, that is a dumb thing to go into debt for. Never go into debt for school. That is my one thing with schooling. So I'm not going to do an entire episode on schooling. If you have to go into debt to be an audio engineer, it's not worth being an audio engineer. Don't ever go into debt for music. Ever. Just don't go into debt ever in general beyond that. Great financial advice. I wouldn't necessarily reduce every single relationship, every person that you meet down to some sort of progress. Like is this person going to get me something? So I'm going off the second point that I wrote down here is, are those sessions building towards something? The reason I disagree with this is you don't want to reduce relationships and people down to how it's going to help you. That is a really, really selfish way, a desperate looking way of treating people. And that's another thing too, is there's a difference between being busy, being driven, and coming off desperate. And I would say that a lot of people struggle with this and they don't realize that they're doing this. Coming off desperate is the thing that will kill relationships. It makes you look bad. It destroys trust. You can do everything that a driven person can do without looking desperate. That's all I'm going to say. Like, think about that. Just avoid looking desperate. Same thing. Like, this goes into like my philosophy with other things too. Like, you can have ideas and opinions, political beliefs, without seeming desperate. Okay, let's end there. Okay, let's see. Okay, this number five, point number five here is you just need to read the E-Myth, like the first half of the E-Myth. You need to, a lot of people are not treating it like a business at the beginning. There's no invoicing, there's no emails, there's no online presence. I'm not saying you make reels. I'm not saying you make TikToks. I'm not saying become a content creator, but you need to be searchable. You need to be able to be found. Like, I would say just as much as like a mix reel or a mix portfolio is important, if you think that's important, then I would say a website or a biography or some sort of way, having pictures up on your Instagram. Dude, I have lots of profiles. People on Instagram follow me on Instagram and they have zero posts. And so I have I don't even look into them. I just immediately don't spend any time on you. You have nothing to share. I don't even follow back ever. Like, I don't care. Yeah, dude. Like, I've done this a few times and I don't want to be an asshole, but I'm serious. Like, I will go out to a networking event. I connect with someone and I notice they are like, hey, do you do Instagram? They're like, oh yeah, I have one. And then they have zero posts. I don't even bother following back a lot of the times. It's like, what's the point of me following you if I don't know, post something, like have some way of being front of mind with people. Like, have, you're building a brand, whether you like it or not, right? Whether you like it or not, people are seeing and interpreting how you move. So do it on purpose. Do it on purpose. I'm not saying be a content creator, but it is a business. Or you can't just make like a coffee shop and have absolutely zero, no Yelp page, no Google page, no Instagram page, no social media at all, no website, and then just completely rely on just traffic on the street. That's insane. That would be insane for a copy business. It's also insane for you as an engineer. Don't do that. Again, I'm not saying be a content creator. I've said that like four times now. Clients don't want just great mixes. They want a smooth professional experience. Okay, so what that means is one thing that everybody needs to focus heavily on, not just on presentation, but as well as customer experience. Now, as much as great mixes are important, they also want to know, there's a lot of unspoken stuff here. A lot of artists just want to know that you're rooting for them, that you're on their team, that you're wanting the best for them and for their song, and that you're working your hardest. And what better way to show that than to constantly every day text them, be like, hey, I got through this today. Hey, I'm going to work on your project today, tomorrow. I'm not going to be able to get to it till next week, whatever it is, right? Just constantly communicating with your clients, being super amenable and open to suggestions, not taking anything personally. Focusing on the experience of the client will get you future gigs, will get you more gigs, will spread word of mouth like wildfire. It's insane. Like, the barrier to entry to be do well in this industry is super easy. It's super low, right? Like, all you have to do is to be a reliable, communicative person. Boom, you got clients. If you're replying to emails quickly, you're replying to texts immediately. When someone asks for stems or alt mixes or revisions and you do them the same day or the next day, or at least respond and be like, hey, I'm not going to be able to get to it in 3 days. And then you actually follow your word. They don't need to continue to follow up with you. Boom. Amazing. You're in. That's all you have to do. It, like the barrier to entry is so low, and I don't understand why people struggle with this. That if this is a business, this isn't like something you do for fun. Like, and this is, again, I should have started the episode like this. This is assuming that you're trying to build a business, right? That is the big part of the podcast. The point of the podcast is helping people, documenting my own journey, and then helping people start a mixing business. Okay? For real. Huge. If you're not trying to run a business, then you have space to have an ego, to do whatever the hell you want, to leave people unread. You have no risk because you're not trying to get more clients necessarily. You're just doing this for fun. And that's something that people need to consider. If you are trying to run a business, if you're trying to make money from this, you cannot afford to do that. Any of the ghost people, you cannot afford to ghost people. You cannot afford to ignore people. You cannot afford to not email, reply. You cannot afford to not use a calendar, not use some sort of systems for your business. You cannot afford to take care of your business like a business. You cannot afford to do that. And like, not just like, oh, someone that does this regularly. I mean, even as far as to missing once. Literally, I'm not going to go as far as say like, out of 10 years of great business, you miss one time, you've ruined your business. I'm not saying that. That's going to happen. But you should treat your business like that. You should be deathly afraid of fucking up a customer experience once. And then deathly afraid of that bad news spreading like wildfire. Be afraid of that. That's a good way to run the business. Good. That's some anxiety you need in your life, honestly. Okay, number 6, they're isolated. The industry runs on who knows you, who vouches for you, who thinks of you when a session comes up. A lot of talented engineers are locked in their bedroom studios with no community, no mentors, no industry touch points. Okay. Community isn't just motivation, it's a pipeline. All right, that's straightforward. I'm a bedroom mixer. I stay in my house all day. I work from home. And that the bad thing about that, when I was working in a recording studios are a little bit more practical, and it's kind of like sometimes people just need recording. There's a lot more people that just need recording. I don't care who records than people that just need mixing. I don't care who mixes it. That mixing is a lot more nuanced and is a lot more personal. Recording is a lot less personal, a lot less nuanced. It's just like, who can do it? Who's open right now, right? So when you work in a recording studio, that's a great way to naturally meet a lot of people. But if you are working from home in a bedroom, you have to go out of your way to meet people. Okay, next point. Okay, so I said this before already, but talent is the floor, not the ceiling. It gets you in the room. Everything else keeps you there. Okay, the good news with all of this is that all of it is fixable, and it's a decisions. It's a collection of decisions that you need to make and commitments that you need to make. We did an episode on commitments earlier this year. None of the things that I talked about today is about getting more talented. It's about putting in like foresight work, becoming more conscientious about how you run things, how you operate things. These are the things. And we didn't even talk about like having a baseline budget, like understanding the bare minimum that it takes to continue to run your business and to pay rent. Like, what is rent? What is utilities? What is your groceries? Like, understanding that and budgeting. We're not even doing like financial advice. This is just an episode on why people stay broke outside of finances. I'm going to say a couple of points about finances. Understand your budgets. Do budgeting, right? Like, understand what your bare minimum is, what like your normal minimum is, and then what like a good high goal is. Like, have a high goal too. Like, do your taxes, file them, look up state, city, and federal taxes and how to file them. We talked about like filing through the Secretary of State and LLC. Like, there's some baseline stuff that you have to do. Read some books about business. I'm serious. E-Myth, the first half of E-Myth, absolutely crucial. It's basically why small businesses die early. That's what that book's about and how to prevent it. You need to read it. Okay. There's so many things that it's just like, honestly, I'm not even that smart. These are things that are accessible to me as a non-smart person. And that means they're accessible to you too. So go out and YouTube stuff, read stuff. This is part of the business. You have to keep this front of mind, like how to run a business. This is a business. This is not just a hobby. And if it is just a hobby, forget everything that I said. Don't feel bad if you don't get paid for stuff, because that's not why you're doing it. Okay. Let's see here. I think that's it for this episode. If you want more like practical mixing tips, like what to do with a compressor, what like different ways of making a chorus bigger than a verse, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access to all of our exclusive episodes and ad-free podcast episodes. Yeah, you can still play from Spotify if that's what you're listening to. You can play it from Patreon directly. So anyway, that's available for you. All you have to do is go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Thank you so much for listening. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. You already love the Mixing Music Podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today.